Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're live from the Oxygen Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what is going on, my friend?
Burnsy, what's going on?
I couldn't tell whether you were going to do you responding to me or your impersonation of Dan responding to me. Well, as I could tell, you were on the fence, like, which way to go? Which way do I do it? You're not quite
well,
sure.
Well, you know, considering I'm going to hit the Mega Millions or whatever it's called tonight, Burnsy.
Is that tonight?
It's tonight, yeah. And my
how much?
My,
okay,
my group. So I've got, you know. So Chelsea got some tickets, so we have a chance because she really doesn't want to win. She just wants to be best friends with David from My Lottery Dream Home or whatever it's called.
So I'm sure she wants to win too.
I'm sure she doesn't just want to win to be friends with the guy
who buys homes for people who win the lottery. I'm sure there's more to it than that. I'm sure she'd like to win too.
But then I've got like my group friends that are all like, dude, let's throw in $10 each. Why not? So I got like six friends, you know, from back in high school that are all like, let's throw in 10 each. Maybe it'll be a story. Six idiot friends win the Mega Millions jackpot.
Okay. So what is the jackpot now? What is it?
Like 850 million?
So 850. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at a story from NBC News. Powerball jackpot increases to 730 million. Mega Millions rises to eight. Wow, so between the two of them, between Powerball and Mega Millions, I mean, you're talking about 1.5 billion.
We got $141 million each. We just divided 850 divided by six because the six of us are going to win. I just told them 141 million each. For me and my dirtbag friends, yeah.
your dirtbag friends.
My six friends. Yeah. I've never seen them.
I don't think that's a real charming way to split money with them if you're going to call them your dirtbag friends like that. Yes. I don't know. This might meet my threshold for I have to get in on this. I might have to run down to the store after the show. I mean, I'm not usually one to partake in such things, but this might be the threshold for me to go do it.
If it's $10, I mean, I don't ever think about these things, right? I don't play them, but when I get to this point, you're like, man, for the fun of it, like you wake up the next morning and there's that sliver of hope that you might have $850 million.
The sliverest of slivers, just a tiny little shard of hope, which really is probably not even worth getting down in the car and driving and buying the lottery tickets, but maybe that sliver is in.
Got to be in it to win it, Burnsy.
Apparently, you can't win if you don't play, Gambo. That's what the marketing strategist said a few years ago. You can't win if you don't play. Suns played last night, but they didn't win. That's our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
108-104, Suns lose to the Memphis Grizzlies to fall to 7-5 on the season. In a game that can be defined not just by these two things, but I certainly think they were the two most noteworthy developments out of the game. Number one, DeAndre Ayton's aggressiveness, and number two, Devin Booker's lost jump shot. And both of those were, you know, first and foremost, kind of what's going on with the Phoenix Suns right now. First game they'd played in a week. We hadn't seen them since last Monday against the Washington Wizards. They lose to the Grizzlies. Booker goes 5-21. That's bad news. And they lose, obviously. And the good news is that Ayton finally showed the kind of aggression around the rim that we've been asking for out of him all year long. We finally saw it last night.
Yeah, listen, we've talked about what an elite defensive rebounder he is, and he was. But, you know, one of the things that has been, you know, really the negative on him has just been the lack of aggressiveness around the baskets. I mean, you sent me a tweet that said Ayton had 7 dunks through the first 11 games. He had 5 tonight. Good. Yeah, be aggressive. I mean, you're 7 feet tall, and you're strong, and you're bigger than everybody. Yeah, dunk the basketball when you're around there. A lot of times, and it's not that there's two things that DeAndre Ayton did in those first 11 games. He settled for fadeaway jumpers, or he kicked the ball outside to the three-point line. Well, whatever, you know, made him do that instead of going up strong, I don't know. But it's obvious that during this week where they didn't play, he got the message The message is when you get that ball on the offensive rebound or you get a pass from Chris, dunk the basketball. Don't settle for a fadeaway. Don't kick it back out to the three. If you're close enough, make a move and go dunk the basketball. Get to the free throw line if you get fouled. So I think that was something that we saw yesterday. It's the positive coming out of a negative, right? The negative is that they lost to the Memphis Grizzlies. The positive right. is DeAndre Ayton did some things that everybody has been asking him to do for the first, you know, 11 games of the season.
And don't get us wrong. We're not, at least I'm not, and I don't think you are either, trying to sugarcoat the negative by highlighting the positive. We'll get to the negative in just a minute. It's just that the positive is something that we've been searching for basically since the start of the season, asking for since the start of the season. And there were a couple of moments. We were on the air yesterday when he unleashed that dunk in the third quarter, and I watched yes. a lot of the replay last night on Fox Sports Arizona, and it was such a – it was a relief to see him do it. He catches the ball in the low block, and you're right. The DeAndre Ayton that we're accustomed to seeing maybe does a little fadeaway towards the baseline, does a little step towards his left, does a little 10-foot fadeaway from the baseline, or he kicks it out because he feels like he doesn't have a good shot. This DeAndre Ayton caught the ball at the low post, made a very quick, decisive spin move to his left, and went right at the rim. And I hate to make a big deal out of it, but moments like that for Ayton, especially this year, have been so few and far between to see him play like that, be aggressive like that. There was another play where I think he shot a three. It was a long rebound. It came back to him. He had all sorts of space in front of him. And instead of pull up for like a 15, 17-foot jump shot, which we saw him do, I believe it was last week against the Wizards, he had a ton of space in front of him, and yet he was very content to take that 17-footer. He instead dribbled the basketball three or four times to get himself a better spot and to put more pressure on the defense last night. That's the kind of stuff we're talking about, DeAndre Ayton needing to do more. And we're not the only ones talking about it. Here is Monty Williams after last night's game talking about the performance and what Ayton did. And well, actually, here's Ayton on his performance last night. I'll tell you what Monty said in a second.
I mean, it looked good, but I could have done more. Thinking back, I missed a lot of opportunities on punishing their switches. You know what I'm saying? Today's game was like college. You know, they switched a lot, and I'm always on – the guard was always on me. You know, and I didn't really – I don't think I emphasized that early in the game to really establish that dominance down low when they read switch, because they still had some type of life and confidence in that switching. So I think that's where, you know, it looked good on paper, but that's where it hurt us the most, on me not taking advantage of those mismatches.
Monty, quote, "That's how he has to play. He's capable of doing that every night." Chris Paul, quote, "I'm going to keep challenging him to be that. Everybody on our team is so hard on him because we know what he's capable of. To be one of the greats in your league, you have to have consistency, and he's more than capable of it." Close quote.
It's a thing we talk about all the time. You know, the difference between an average player to a good player, a good player to a great player, and a great player to a superstar is the amount of games that you're consistently great. That's it. And, you know, A lot of these players are in the NBA, man. Every single one of them is capable of having a great game. They're all capable of having a great game. But how many in an 82-game season, not 72, but an 82-game season, how many can have 10 great games, 20 great games, 40 great games, 50 great games, 60 great games? That's what separates, you know, the men from the boys in this league. DeAndre Ayton last night, 18 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, had a block shot, 4-for-5 from the free throw line, 7-of-14 from the field. You know, that's more in line with what we would consider a great game for him. You know, yeah. That's dominant. I mean, that's dominant. I mean, you know, 20-12, he was almost a 20 and you know, double-double. I mean, not a double-double, a 20-10 game. But 18-16, 2 more points, and he's at 20-16. That was a really solid game for him. Not enough to overcome the loss because of how poorly Devin Booker played, but the good sign is that Ayton came through.
5-21 in the game, Devin Booker was, and we mentioned it last night, and we'll mention it again, Vince Murata doing the research so we don't have to. That was Booker's second worst shooting game when he's had more than 20 attempts in his entire career. More research for you. Just take away the three-point shots. Look just at the two-point shots of Devin Booker last night. He was 3-of-15 on twos. Just the ninth game of his career his entire career that he's missed at least 12 two-point shots. To say that was a rare night's work for Devin Booker, we have very rarely seen him be that bad over the course of his career, which kind of suggests that it's a one-off, right? That we're just not going to see. He hasn't been great this year. No one's going to deny that.
But
to
good.
Think that he's that bad, that was kind of a one-off last night in terms of his career.
Now, listen, even on nights that Devin Booker is off, he still finds a way to, you know, impact the game. You know, and go like, you know, last night he scored 12 points. But, you know, in the loss to Washington, he had 33. In the loss to Detroit, he had 23. In the loss to the Clippers, he had 25. In the loss to Sacramento, he had 26. So, you know, he still manages to get, for the most part, get his points. But last night was just, I mean, that was just a really atrocious game for Devin. And a lot of it, to me, is probably the week off, right? He's a shooter. And, you know, he probably has been shooting on his own and everything like that. But the timing and the rhythm were off because they haven't played in a week.
Yeah, here's Devin Booker today on how last night's game just did not sit well with anybody in the Phoenix Suns organization, least of all Devin Booker. Here's him from a press conference today.
It was a tough night. Obviously, that didn't sit well with me or anybody in this gym. But there's nights like that. Obviously can't do anything about it now. Losing any game in this league is tough. Letting one slip away in this league is tough, especially at the expense of the way that we play. But, you know, we have another one tomorrow. That's my main focus now. So we just got after and practice, and we're ready to go.
They do have the Rockets tomorrow in a brand-new-look Rockets in a nationally televised game.
Victor Oladipo. So
yeah, that's what's next up for Suns tomorrow as they try to get the taste of this one out of their mouths. Now 6-7-5 on the season. But when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it was an awful day and an awful story. One former Diamondbacks employee, he is no longer in baseball and might not ever be again if some have their way. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo show. An awful, awful, awful story. And chances are decent that we would have brought it up briefly here on the Burns and Gambo show, but because this is a name that Diamondback fans are familiar with, very familiar with from the last few years, in a way this became our story here in Arizona. Not entirely, not more so than, say, Chicago or certainly New York. But Jarrett Porter, who was the senior VP and assistant general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks since 2017, who had interviewed for multiple general manager jobs over the last couple of years or so and had finally landed one of those with the New York Mets, was on the job for roughly a month and a week before he was fired by the Mets today after just getting hired on December 13th for sending explicit texts that were published by ESPN.com to a then female reporter who was working in the United States from another country. Those texts were made public last night, and the Mets wasted no time in firing Jarrett Porter as their general manager today. In fact, Gambo just read a tweet from Bob Nightingale that the Mets will not hire a GM to replace Jarrett Porter until the offseason. So they're just going to go without one until they get to the next upcoming offseason.
They have a guy who's their assistant GM that interviewed for the job to be the GM, and he was, you know, apparently, you know, he worked with Porter at some level, so he'll probably just take over. Because he did, I mean, I don't know the guy's name, but he interviewed for the job to be the GM. He didn't get hired, but then, you know, they hired him on as an assistant to Porter. Look, this story, it's disturbing, it's disgusting, and it's you know, you just can't do it. I mean, he deserved to be fired. And, you know, I'm not always quick to say this guy deserves to be fired, but, you know, you can't have that type of culture. You can't have that. I mean, what he did to that woman who didn't ask for any of that was uncalled for, and he's paying the price for it, and rightfully so. You know, what happens to him in the future, I don't want to say he should never be in baseball again or anything like that. I mean, he's got to work on himself. He's got to take all the necessary steps to show that he, you know, what he did was wrong, and work on himself. And then maybe someday he can get back into baseball, and because that's his passion and that's his love, and that's what he wants to do. I when I first saw that last night, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, there are some people like, oh, what about the Dime? The Dimebacks had absolutely no idea about this. Come on. They had no idea. I mean, this was a conversation between him and this woman. And, you know, when ESPN found out about it, they asked her and she said, I don't want this to get out because I could lose my job over this because she's in a different country. So that story never got out. So there's no way to vet that, right? There's no way when you're vetting Jared Porter and you're hiring him that you could sit there and say, well, what about this incident with this text? You don't know. You don't know about it. You know, a lot of people could be creeps, you know, without you knowing that they're creeps, right? But what he did to that poor woman, I mean, it's disgusting. Women deserve an opportunity in the workplace, especially in sports, to be able to work without that type of harassment. And that's what it is. It is harassment. And it's
there's no doubt
for, and you should not use your power or your authority to try to take advantage of somebody like that.
Through Zach Buchanan, I got this off of his Twitter account. He covers the Diamondbacks for The Athletic. He got a statement from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Quote, "We do not condone this behavior and are extremely troubled by the details that have been reported. We were obviously not aware of these allegations from 2016, and had we been, we would have investigated and addressed the situation immediately." All of this happened when he was with the Cubs over the course of 2016, including at one point, the reporter, ignored more than 60 messages from Jared Porter before he sent the final lewd photo, the contents of which I just don't want to describe on the radio because it is very, very lewd. But apparently the whole thing culminated on August 11th of 2016, when he sent her like 17 different pictures, and the first 15 were of this hotel and restaurants in Los Angeles that he was trying to get her to meet him at. And by this time, she hadn't responded to him in weeks. I mean, after dozens and dozens and dozens of text messages, but he's still texting her. Here's the line I was looking for. Porter would send 62 unanswered text messages, including 7 photos between July 19th and August 10th. I mean, it's like at some point, you just have to, what is going through your head when you're texting somebody 60 times and you're not getting a response and you're sending photographs and you're doing things you shouldn't be doing? Yeah. What are you thinking about when you're doing things like that without actually thinking, right?
I don't know. I mean, listen, again, everything he did was wrong. He deserved to be fired. It's definitely harassment. There were messages that he sent to her, and he's like, "Do you like what you see?" And she was like, "Yes." I think 2 times she said yes to, "Do you like?" And then she said, "Are you married?" And he said, "No." So I don't know. I'm not in his shoes. Is it possible he thought that she was okay with being flirted with or that they could get together? But, you know, listen, what he did was wrong. He took it way too far, sending pictures of the hotel and you're missing out and, you know, taking the pictures of himself laying on the bed and then the other ones, which we're not going to describe. I mean, that cost you your job. That cost you your career. Might cost you your career. I mean, I don't know if you'll ever get hired again or not.
I know this, and this is coming from a report from the Mets beat writer for MLB.com, Anthony DiComo, tweeted out a couple of hours ago, Major League Baseball is launching an investigation into Jared Porter, according to a person with knowledge of the situation. And they should. Based on the results of that, Porter could face suspension, which would prevent him from holding another MLB job without reinstatement. I did find a couple of things kind of interesting, not interesting is the wrong word, but unusual about this story. The ESPN had it when Porter was with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
They had to hold it because she
wasn't going to allow them to go forward with it, and so they didn't go any further with it. It does make you wonder, not particular to the Diamondbacks, but how many people around baseball knew that this was something kind of percolating under the surface. Because remember, as part of the original story, she had shared this information with a Cubs employee who was from her country, which is unnamed, because they're trying to protect her identity and who she is. And so somebody in the Cubs organization knew about it. Did others in Major League Baseball know about it? Because that's going to be kind of the next sort of step, I would imagine, is, all right, who knew?
who didn't say anything, who was part of the culture of the cover-up and things like that. I mean, there was even a part of the story where she had turned down assignments to cover the Diamondbacks in 2017. Or she went to one and she was like hiding from him. She didn't want him to see her at the ballpark when she might have been covering the Diamondbacks. So she would refuse some of those assignments. And again, all of this is just it is just so crappy. I mean, it is so crappy that women in any industry, not just ours, but any industry, this is the kind of stuff you got to deal with. It's just so
She has the right, just
unfair. Like
anybody else. She has the right. And the unnamed Cubs employee, it was an international scout, no longer with the organization. So they got to find out, did he tell anybody in that Cubs organization? Because that could have stopped this whole thing, right? Did he tell anyone in the Cubs organization, hey, you know, Jared Porter, who works for us, he has been, you know, sexting or however, whatever they call it with this woman. She doesn't want this. She's not responding. Whatever the issues are, right? I mean, if he brought it up to somebody in the Cubs organization, you know, then we'll find out. I think, you know, for the most part, and I think about myself, right? Different situation. I make contacts all the time. If she was making a contact with Jared Porter, would say, "Listen, you're a scout. You're probably you could be a good source for me. You could be somebody I can learn from. I can." And that's what you do. I mean, that's what you do. When you're in a position, when you're covering a team or you're in our position or anybody else's, and you have the ability to make contacts and, you know, stay in touch, you find things out and it helps you. And, I mean, that's what I've done my whole life. My whole life I've done that without being sexually harassed, okay, without having any of that issues. I can't imagine what this woman was going through having to deal with all these messages. Like, here I am. I'm trying to do my job. I'm trying to get into journalism. I'm trying to be able to cover a team. I think I have a contact who's a scout. And, you know, who knows, maybe down the road he can be an assistant GM or a GM. You never know. You make contacts with people, and all of a sudden this is what it leads to. It leads to, you know, him sending all the pictures of himself to her. You know, there was no doubt that he was, you know, last night the Mets didn't fire him last night, but there's no doubt they were going to. I mean, they were going to fire him. They just had to do their due diligence and check.
I saw the story flash on my phone last night, and that's it. Jared Porter's not going to be the general manager of the New York Mets for much longer, and sure enough, by this morning, he wasn't. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Arizona Cardinals reportedly have made a move on their coaching staff. The details of that we'll share with you next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell is with us. She has our Twitter poll question of the day. It's a total mystery to me. I have
What would you do if you won the Mega Millions?
Oh, that could be a fun open-ended question. We can add that.
What would you do if you won the Mega Millions? What's the first thing you would do if you won the Mega Millions?
Like all of it? If I won all of the Mega Millions?
What's the first thing you do if you won? You're the sole winner, Dave Burns. You quit your job tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow. No, I'd have to.
Friday?
Yeah, maybe Friday. I might give you a couple weeks' notice, but not tomorrow. No, I don't know if I'd quit my job. I don't want to. I love my job. I don't know if I think I'd probably quit my job, but I don't know for sure that I would. Cause
I agree.
I would.
I love my job too. I would not quit my job.
I would quit my job.
Sarah would quit her job. Cody, would you quit your job?
I don't know about you guys, but I like working here.
Wow. Yeah, Tony, we're for a great company. I like working here too.
Of course we do, but if you won Mega Millions and you could spend your time traveling the world,
I wouldn't quit right now. I would be like, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, I wouldn't do that.
It wouldn't be an instant out. That's fair.
I can't travel right now.
I would probably quit my job. I would probably quit my job, and I would probably buy a really, really nice house somewhere in the mountains where I could ski right up to my back door.
Ooh.
And I would buy a really nice house on the beach where I could walk out my front door and be on my own beach. And I would probably do those two things first.
Oh,
and then
gosh,
I'd have to figure the rest out. I would have one in the mountains and one on the beach and not have to choose. Because everyone asks you all the time, are you a mountains guy or are you a beach guy? Mega Millions.
All
I could be
it,
both,
baby.
I would
all
go
of
to
it.
George
all
Clooney,
the...
and I would be like, hey, what do you want for your palace there on Lake Como? What do you want? What you want for it? I'm buying you out, Clooney. I'm buying you out.
You would buy Clooney's house in Como?
Buying it. I want Clooney's house.
I mean, that's next level, right? It's not just I got a place on Lake Como. It's I got George Clooney's place.
People will be driving
on Lake Como.
People will be on the boat. I mean, that's Clooney. No, that's Gambo's house. That's not Clooney's. Hey, that's, isn't that where George Clooney? George Clooney doesn't live there now. Gambo does.
Joe Gambadoro.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. What is our real poll question? Assuming this one might show up later, Sarah.
Yes, that we will definitely publish that one in a second. But the question, it comes from the NFL. The Ravens last night they released Mark Ingram, running back Mark Ingram last night, the three-time Pro Bowler. He's been phased out of the Ravens game plan throughout the 2020 season. So we are asking, which of the following three running backs would you most want taking the majority of the snaps for the Cardinals in 2021? Kenyon Drake, okay. Chase Edmonds, or Mark Ingram?
Of those three?
Chase.
Yes, of those three.
I'm going Chase Edmonds. It's because it's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's going to be there.
Yeah, the other two, I don't know if they're going to be there. I mean, if you can get Kenyon Drake on the cheap, I wouldn't mind him coming back and still getting the bulk of the carries. But I'll say Chase Edmonds as well. Yes,
okay.
Chase Edmonds.
Okay.
Yes.
Chase Edmonds, I expected that Chase Edmonds would win this poll, and he has 46% of the vote going to him. What I was really interested to see was Kenyon Drake versus Mark Ingram. Who would want Drake over Ingram and vice versa? Mark Ingram finishes second right now in this poll. 32% of our voters, 22% say Kenyon Drake. So Cardinals fans definitely souring more and more on Kenyon Drake.
By the way, yeah, he didn't have a good year. Clooney's house is only worth $13 million. I found one I like better for $21 million.
You can do better.
Yeah, I can do better. This is nice, but I got one here for $21 million I'm looking at.
Yeah, don't slum it at Clooney's place. You can do
never settle.
Yeah.
Never settle.
Never settle.
Never settle. Never settle.
Million.
Yeah. Never settle.
I mean, it's nice, but I can do better.
Well, you can. Well, good luck with your Mega Millions tonight, and hopefully I can get down to the Circle K or whatever down the street before the drawing, because I might actually have to get in on this, too. I'll have to call the decision maker, see if she can stop off and get us some Mega Millions tickets on the way home. Mark Ingram will be released by the Ravens on Tuesday. He's 31 years old. He was a healthy scratch for four of their final five games, including both of the playoff games. Creates about $5 million in salary cap room. I expect, Gambo, that we can have an Ingram-specific conversation, but I expect we're going to have a lot of Mark Ingram types that hypothetically we could have this conversation about over the next month or so. Running backs released by their team and wondering whether the Cardinals should have interest in that running back.
Yeah, I mean, any running back that's 30 years old and now you could get that wants to hang around for another year or two and take cheap money and play for $2 million is somebody you need to be interested in. Look, I mean, the Ravens didn't activate him for the playoff loss to the Bills. He was a healthy scratch for them. He was a good player just a couple of years ago, but he's 31 years old. He was very good with the New Orleans Saints. He was a former first round pick. He was a former Pro Bowl player. He's had some, big seasons, over 1,000 yards. He's got some wear and tear on him. I mean, there's a lot of wear and tear on him. But teams that are looking for a veteran running back to fill a backup role are going to be able to get him on the cheap. He still wants to play. And, you're not going to have to pay him $5 million, I don't believe. I think you'll be able to pay him a lot less than that. So I expect that, that the Cardinals will kick the tires on a lot, not just him, but a lot of players in that category.
Yeah, I think his age really makes me nervous. And not even so much his age, but like you said a second ago, his usage, I mean, he went through a stretch there from 2014 through 2019, so basically the better part of like six seasons, where he was touching the ball a lot. He was getting a lot of usage, a lot of touches, a lot of wear and tear, a lot of pounding. And look, I get it. He's an energetic player. He brought a certain kind of excitement to the Ravens in terms of, pushing Lamar Jackson for the MVP award. And I imagine he'll land somewhere with somebody. I would not, even if the Cardinals were interested in a veteran running back like him, or say specifically him, I wouldn't want him getting the ball a lot in his hands, because he's just running back, 31, had a lot of carries. You just wonder how much is actually left in that tank,
Yeah, wrong side of 30 and slowing down. But, you're also not going to look to him to be a featured back. You would look to him to be, a back that spells, Chase. And listen, you go get him on the cheap, that you could still draft a running back in the second or third round. I mean,
sure,
so many of these running backs that you're getting in this second round are having a lot of success. So you could have three running backs. You could have Chase, you could have Ingram, and you could have somebody that you draft.
Yeah. The Cardinals, and it hasn't been made official by them. It's been reported by CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd, but the Cardinals are expected to hire former Jets assistant Sean Jefferson to be their wide receivers coach. We've got a story about this up at ArizonaSports.com. He was with the Jets the last couple of years. He got let go when Adam Gase got let go. Presumably, if this report is accurate, he would replace David Rye, who was the Cardinals wide receiver coach. He was let go after their 8-8 finish. The Cardinals also have a hole at passing game coordinator. There's been a report that from within they're going to promote Cam Turner to be the new quarterback's coach. Now maybe Sean Jefferson becomes the wide receiver's coach. No word on if either one of these guys would take on more of a coordinator type position, passing game coordinator type position, if that were even there. I know you said a couple days ago you thought, if anything, it might be more of a Sean Coogler taking on more responsibility within the Cardinals when it comes to overall their offense.
I don't expect, you know, and my reasoning for that is very simple. I mean, it was seven job openings, and those seven job openings, every offensive coordinator that gets hired, that's going to be more attractive than the Cardinals. The reason the Cardinals aren't attractive is you're going into your third year with some uncertainty, and if this thing doesn't bode well and you come in for 1 year and they decide to, okay, we're going to change the coach because, you know, the Cardinals didn't play, well, then, you know, you're out. You're out after 1 year. So these guys are very more likely to take on a new job, which you feel like, okay, I'm going to have 3 years at least to work with this coach and get this thing going. So there's a lot more security in the job and taking one of the seven that's out there than taking a job with the Cardinals. And I think the Cardinals will keep Kliff as the play caller and Kliff as the main guy because that's how they're building their offense. But I do think that they can look to within to see if there's somebody that can help them. And I think, to me, the guy that makes the most sense is Sean Coogler.
Since we're talking about assistants, I'll just throw this out there because I just saw this on social media about 20 minutes ago. Ian Rappaport tweeted out that the Chicago Bears spent yesterday interviewing former Cardinals and Giants defensive coordinator James Betcher for their vacant D.C. job. He would be a candidate to replace Chuck Pagano, who retired as the defensive coordinator of the Bears a couple of weeks ago. So Betch, former Cards D.C., I was on one of our virtual tailgate Zoom calls with him, you know, pregame before a Cardinals game. Interesting to see him get a little love from the Chicago Bears and interviewing to get back as a DC in this league.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good defensive coordinator with the Cardinals. He did a good job, and then, you know, with the Giants, it didn't work out so well. And we saw Todd Bowles, right? Todd Bowles is going to get some interest in a head coaching job. I think he'll get an opportunity to be a head coach again. So, you know, that staff that Bruce put together had some, you know, really quality people in it, quality coaches there. And so those guys, you know, you like to see them get opportunity. So Bruce went through a few different defensive coordinators, but those guys had success when they were here.
Yeah. When we come back, there's no doubt Aaron Rodgers has played at an MVP level this season and is probably going to win that trophy. But he's got a history in this game coming up on Sunday that might work against him, or will it? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Two great games coming up on Sunday. And as we talked about yesterday, and I'm sure we'll talk about it over the course of the week, there's really no bad outcome this weekend. I think typically you get down to these final four games, or these final four teams, I should say, and you can always find one team that you really don't care about, one team you think is kind of boring, one team that doesn't bring a whole lot to the table, and you'd rather not see them in the Super Bowl. I don't know for sure how you feel about this, Gambo. I look at these four teams, these two games, and I would be entirely satisfied with any matchup for the Super Bowl based off of who's left. There's no bad matchup as far as I'm concerned. So it makes rooting, I know you hate Tom Brady, so that's going to be easy for you in the NFC game, but it does make people without a rooting interest, it's kind of hard to know who to root for, because I think they all potentially are fantastic Super Bowl matchups depending on what happens Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? I mean, is there a bad Super Bowl matchup? Is there one where you're like, oh, that's a terrible match? No, I think all the Super Bowl matchups are good. I mean, State Farm would love it, right? I mean, you know, Mahomes against Rodgers. I mean, that's a State Farm dream right there.
Sure.
You get the Patrick Price. That haircut. Gosh, you didn't have to get that haircut.
Or Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball to his
dog. Throwing the ball to his dog.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, or hitting the golf ball. You know, has that landed yet? Yeah, State Farm would love that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. But, I mean, that's a great matchup of, you know, a young quarterback and an older quarterback who are both great. And both have won a Super Bowl. So they both have one Super Bowl, both be looking for their second. You know, Brady against Mahomes, same thing. Older quarterback, the veteran against the young guy. So that could be the case there. And Josh Allen, you know, I mean, you know, looking to get, you know, looking to make Baltimore competitive, not just for this year, but for many years. But to put himself in that conversation of being the first in that young group of players to win a Super Bowl, you know, after Mahomes, but his draft class being the first to get it.
Yeah. And of course, as we briefly mentioned yesterday, it's a chance for the Packers quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, who is in all likelihood going to be the MVP of the NFL this year, for him to join kind of that uber exclusive club of quarterbacks who have two Super Bowl rings. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, guys who have won one, nothing against the guys who have won one, but how important was it for Manning to get that second? How important was it for Breeze chasing that second? And for Rodgers to get that second is going to require him to do something that, let's be honest, he hasn't been all that good at, and that's 100%. This game. The NFC Championship game, which I know that they've all been on the road for him. He's never enjoyed an NFC Championship game at home, but you look at his numbers, and he's struggled in this game throughout the course of his career.
You know, you go back to 2010 against the Bears, 244 yards passing, no touchdowns, two interceptions, passer rating of 55.4, not good. 2014 against Seattle, 178 yards passing, one touchdown, two interceptions, 55.8 rating, not good. Got better against the Falcons. He had 287 yards with three touchdowns and a pick and had a rating of 91.6. So that was better. He was 27 out of 45. And then against the 49ers, I mean, 31 out of 39, 326 yards, two touchdowns, but two interceptions. So in these games, in these four games, he has seven interceptions to just six touchdown passes. So six touchdown passes, seven interceptions in the NFC title games. So you know, people are making the argument that he has struggled in these games, and the numbers back that up.
Yeah, and he talked about hosting a championship game and the kind of difference that's going to make looking at it from that perspective.
Hopefully it's a little colder than it was tonight, but the fans were special. The energy was special tonight, and there is a home field advantage. And just the fact that we had to host. But it is meaningful to have fans at the game. Hopefully we can get even more if this worked out. I'm sure Mark will have some sort of announcement team at some point in the next few days. But it'll be exciting.
But the thing that and all of those numbers are very interesting, and they're very revealing, and they kind of paint this picture of a guy who wasn't at his best when kind of the moment demanded he be at his best. But if you look at, ignore those numbers for a second and just look at his career numbers and this season that he's had compared to his career numbers, there's a real strong argument to be made that statistically, anyway, this is the best season Aaron Rodgers has ever had. This is the best Aaron Rodgers has ever been. And is that good enough to rise above that?
It doesn't matter. It's a whole failure if they don't win this game. It doesn't, like, he had the best season. Who cares? Aaron Rodgers needs to win a Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to lose again in the NFC Championship game. Aaron Rodgers needs to get to the Super Bowl. He can have the greatest year ever, and it just doesn't matter because it will be looked at as a failure. You had the best team, you had home field advantage, and you were one win away and you couldn't get it done. So again, it'll be look at Aaron Rodgers in these title games. He just keeps failing. He's got to get over this hump to make this season matter, because if he loses this game, the season doesn't matter because they didn't even make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, and that does put him in a different category than, and we talked about Tom Brady yesterday. I think that puts him in a different category than Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady has taken this team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as far as they were expected to go. Anything from here on out is house money. I think you can say the same thing with Josh Allen. Anything from here on out is house money for Josh Allen, given where he is in his career. Patrick Mahomes, probably in a different story. I mean, they were the NFL's best team all year. They're the defending Super Bowl champs. He is, everybody believes him to be one of the best quarterbacks. He might have to get to another game this year to win another game to not feel like it was all just a big waste of time. But yeah, Rodgers is in a uniquely different situation, and not just for his own legacy, but also his future. Remember how this season started? The Packers drafted a quarterback. There was a lot of conversation about, well, how many years does he have left in Green Bay?
Right.
One? Two? How does that narrative change if Aaron Rodgers goes out and wins the Super Bowl this year? How can he force that narrative to change if he goes out and wins a Super Bowl this year? He has a lot riding on this thing.
Listen, they were never going to play Jordan Love over Aaron Rodgers this year. I think that they probably said, oh, let's see how it goes. And if he doesn't have a great year and they don't win, you know, maybe they can move on from him in a year or two. Love was always going to be there for at least a year, maybe two, and he still will be. I mean, now Rodgers has made it crystal clear, this kid's going to sit as long as I want to play. Like, I think that narrative's done. Like, you drafted him. You wasted the, because think about what they could have had, like, if they would have kept that pick. Maybe they could have got a player that could have helped them in some area if they didn't draft the kid. Because if Rodgers wants to play like Brady into his 40s, this kid's contract's going to expire before then. Then you're going to be in that situation like what New England was with Garoppolo. Like, what do you do? Like, what do you do? Do you trade him and try to get something for him? Do you hold on to him? Because I think New England had that ability, man. Do you tag Garoppolo and just wait this out? Because if New England would have played it right, they could have had Garoppolo as their quarterback instead of Cam Newton. But it would have taken a tagging Garoppolo and keeping him while Brady wanted to play out another year or two.
Yeah, and the only reason why I brought up his numbers this year compared to his numbers of the past, and I agree with you that it doesn't really matter if they don't win. I was just trying to say that Rodgers might be better suited this year to overcome his failures in the NFC Championship game than he was in years past, because he's playing better now than he was in years past. I bring up his numbers because I think he's just playing at a higher level than he was in some of those NFC Championship games, which would make the failure of not winning this game even greater, given the season that he's had. There's a lot farther to fall for Aaron Rodgers if he doesn't play well in this game. He's played so well. It's hard to imagine him having a bad game again this year in this moment, given how well he's played this season. He's been unbelievable.
If he has one of those games, two interceptions and a fumble, and they lose, man, it's just like, okay, like,
yeah.
I mean, you go back with him again next year because he had such a great year, but, like, to me, it almost erases everything that was great about this year for Aaron Rodgers, because ultimately that team needs to win a Super Bowl.
When we come back, the Phoenix Suns dropped another game to a team that they probably should have beaten last night. Why are they losing these types of games? You'll hear what Monty Williams had to say on the topic. The Suns head coach, you'll hear from him next on the Burns and Gambo Show.